Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but if the Bible is really the Word of God, you're wondering, wouldn't God have known about some of our modern inventions ahead of time, and couldn't he have told the ancient Hebrews who wrote the Bible? For example, how could the ancient Hebrews have possibly understood anything like the internet or Twitter? Well, God would have known we were going to have Twitter someday, but they wouldn't. My friend, just to show you how ahead of times God is, we have a whole book in the Bible which could be called the Book of Twitter. But it's not. Instead, it's called the Book of Proverbs, where the writers said things in sound bites, things like this: the fool isn't interested in learning, only in expressing his opinion. I'm only insulting myself. Before I became a Christian and while I was in college, I thought I knew everything. And on subjects such as Christianity and the Bible that I knew absolutely nothing about, I shut off my mouth anyway. So it challenged me when I was in high school. Maybe it'll challenge you to some of these tweets from the past known as the Proverbs. But that's not all we're going to talk about today. Today, I am honored to bring back a very good friend and a special guest, Dr. Everett Piper, one of the first, if not the first, to sue the Obama administration over Obamacare. Now, I knew him and liked him long before he did that. But if that had been the only thing he did, he would have had a special place in my book. We will have Dr. Piper on in just a few minutes. First, back to Twitter. A couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago exactly, we introduced a new segment to the Bob Siegel Show. And I mentioned at that time that while I've been very active for years on Facebook, and I've had a Twitter account that I've used occasionally, I had not done much recently until Twitter, or I meant to say I'd not done much on Twitter until recently. That was almost a tweet itself, kind of a dyslexic tweet right there. But I have been enjoying the challenge of saying things with brevity and saying it to the attention challenge generation, which needs things in sound bites. At the end of the week, when I look at all my tweets, it's kind of fun to look back and enjoy what I guess I could call the fruit of my labor, or more correctly put, the pleasant tune of my tweeting. Yes, it's time for another episode of Tweets from Your Old Pal Bob.
It's those same nights in
I know that is the stupidest song that has ever been written, but what can I say? It has the word tweet in it, so I have to use it. All right, I won't give you that explanation every week. Well, maybe I will. I think Nick likes it. He was just waving. Yeah, Nick's nodding. He likes it because it reminds him of the enchanted tiki room at Disneyland. I did not find that room nearly as enchanted as my good friend Nick, but Nick and I are both lovers of Disneyland, so I guess that's the important thing. Anyway, once again, these tweets will be read in the order of which they were written, which means since I skipped a week, I'm going to be reading 2 weeks worth, and you're going to kind of see the news progress. So we start with the first tweet. Hillary says she always expected Democratic primaries to be competitive. She hopes her drones are dumb enough to believe that. Then again, .. My second tweet. Having McConnell and Boehner representing a Republican Congress is the next best thing to no Republican Congress at all. The third tweet is similar. McConnell and Boehner, time for a career change. Maybe the two of you could take up leather craft or something. The next one I wrote on 9/11/15. A day to be thankful for our current commander-in-chief. Oops, almost forgot. April 1 is April Fool's Day. Today is 9/11. Never mind. We come now to the fifth tweet. Very important tweets they are. That North Pole noise is not from global warming icebergs. Just Putin laughing when Obama says Russia should stay out of Syria. The eighth tweet. Obama, as a kid, talking to playground bully. If I get you a job as a hall monitor, will you give me back my sandwich? The seventh tweet. Sanders, for the middle class, I'll be a blood-sucking parasite to the rich. Trump, for the middle class, all, well, it'll be great. Number eight, the caliber of question from CNN to GOP candidates. Donald Trump had a tuna sandwich for lunch. What is your opinion of his food choice? And we now come to the ninth and final tweet that I did over the past couple of weeks. Obama is not a Muslim. He is an agenda-driven socialist who treats Muslim jihadists like a battered wife treats an abusive husband. And that wraps up another episode of Tweets from your old pal, Bob.
It's posting like simplicity.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Just letting the bumper music play a little longer to make up for that stupid tweet song. Now, Nick told me during the break, he says, if you ask me, that's the best part of your program. I said, I'm sure you meant the content and the tweets. And he went, yeah, sure I do. Anyway, our guest today is the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, Dr. Everett Piper, who also authored a great book with a terrific, thought-provoking title. One of the best titles I've ever seen on a book, Why I Am a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. Now, we talked about his book a few years ago when he first appeared on this show as a guest. Much has happened since then, and it's our honor to bring him back. Dr. Piper, welcome back to our program.
Bob, how are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Likewise. It's been a while. We haven't chatted for months, probably.
Well, there's so much going on in the news. I wouldn't even know where to start, but what made me think of contacting you a couple of weeks ago to get you on our show again is I read something to the effect that I don't remember what it's called, but there was some kind of federation of private Christian colleges, and you had chosen to disassociate your university because they were compromising. Maybe you could tell us more about that. Obviously, I'm very lacking in the details here.
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of an overview and then the reason for our decision. The Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, the acronym CCCU, is the representative organization that most Christian colleges and universities in the United States are a member of.
So they're not Wesleyan colleges. They're very cross-denominational then.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All of the Wesleyan colleges are a member of it. Nazarene colleges, non-denominational schools like out your way. It would be Azusa, Point Loma, NAS, Masters, Vanguard, Seattle Pacific, George Fox, Biola, the schools such as that. And then they scatter all the way across the land to the east. Oklahoma Wesleyan was a member until just about a week ago. Why did we withdraw? Eastern Mennonite University in Pennsylvania and Goshen College in Indiana announced immediately after the Obergefell decision in the Supreme Court on gay marriage that they were going to go pro-LGBTQ and pro-gay marriage. In other words, they would no longer, quote-unquote, discriminate against married homosexual couples in their hiring policies or in their admissions procedures. In other words, they were announcing to the world that they didn't see homosexual choice, homosexual behavior as being antithetical to a biblical worldview. The CCCU immediately sent out a note to all of its member presidents, of course I was one, saying that they were going into a time of deliberation and counsel, and they were seeking to have dialogue and try to decide what to do about this. I contacted the CCCU immediately, and this was a month or two ago, and said, I don't see what there is to talk about. I don't understand why dialogue and counsel is what we're doing right now. The time for discussion is over. It's time for a decision. I said this ongoing, prolonged conversation is lending itself to confusion rather than a spirit of conviction, a spirit of courage and confidence. I cannot be part and parcel of this and send a confusing signal to my constituency, my parents, my pastors, my donors, my prospective students and current students, leading them to believe that we think this is something that's debatable. Make a decision. They still have not made a decision to this day. They're supposed to announce it tomorrow, what their decision will be. I began to get more and more uncomfortable with the lack of decision and the conversation. In fact, and I'm being long-winded, Bob, I'll say this and then I'll let you take a breath and let you ask questions, I suppose. I basically said, look, isn't there a bottom line assumption and conviction for any organization where you just don't have, you just don't talk about things? There's some things that are beyond the pale, and the conversation betrays a lack of conviction. For example, would we expect the National Organization of Women to sit around and have a conversation about the power and privilege of men over women as if it was an acceptable alternative to what they stand for? Would we expect PETA to sit around and have a conversation, seek counsel about the virtues of eating meat?
You're making an interesting point. Almost every group with a cause knows what they stand for today, but evangelical Christianity.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I could go on and give, and you could too. We can come up with all these organizations that may have different values than you and I do, but at least they have the spine to stick by their convictions and say, no, we're not going to talk about that. The NAACP isn't going to sit around and talk about the KKK, the virtues of the KKK's views on minorities. That would be absurd. They would say, no, that's an insult to our organization, its constituents, and it's beyond the pale of who we are. We won't have a conversation about that. But here we are as a group of evangelical Christian colleges having a conversation. I'm sorry to be crass and pointed about it, but this is a behavioral choice. Even Gore Vidal and Michel Foucault said that these are behavioral adjectives. Homosexuality is a behavioral adjective. It is not the identity of the individual.
And he's been a self-spoken gay activist for years, Gore Vidal.
Absolutely.
Even though he's a wonderful writer. I love his novels, but he's been very outspoken about his sexual preference, and he does refer to it as a preference.
Exactly. And he said, this is a quote from Gore Vidal, there's no more such thing as a homosexual person than there is a heterosexual person. These are behavioral adjectives. So my point is this, the conversation of volitional sexual homosexual behavior, volitional sexual choice of homosexual behavior, of sodomy and other homosexual acts, is being now discussed within an evangelical umbrella organization as if there is something to talk about. And I would argue there is not.
Now, I'm curious, when you told them there was nothing to talk about, I'm sure they responded, and I'm sure they responded in a very friendly, diplomatic way. What did they offer as their rationalization for saying this is something we could at least talk about? What did they say to you?
Well, and this is what led me to withdraw probably more than anything. The response was, in the spirit of institutional autonomy, quote unquote, the CCCU embraces multiple different denominations and non-denominational schools. And in the spirit of institutional autonomy, we have disagreement on matters such as speaking in tongues, baptism, the woman's role at the pulpit, creation time frames, and other denominational disputes. And this issue needs to be discussed in the same spirit.
Okay, go ahead. What did you say?
I said, you've got to be kidding me. You just put the volitional choice of homosexual sex on the same moral plane as a dispute over speaking in tongues.
Yeah, and here,
I will not concede this point.
Yeah, well, good for you. I'm very proud of you for doing that as a friend and as a colleague. But here's where I think they're being disingenuous, Everett, because it sounds like they were espousing what we would have called the old denominational theory when colonial Americanism was here, where people got together in the different denominations and they said, we do have disagreements on matters of a church structure and on even theologies of lesser importance. Maybe the Bible's even clear on it, but it's not as important as salvation. And they got together and they said, there's certain things we must agree on as denominations and other things where we don't have to agree. So I do accept the fact that when it comes to whether or not a woman could be a pastor, which I actually believe, by the way, but there are churches that are going to have different opinions about that, about the end times, predestination. But when it comes to who is Jesus Christ, why did he come, how are we saved, the gospel itself, there we must have agreement. Now the audience may or may not know this because we have a mixed audience, but there was a time where every denomination also split in the early 20th century into what they called the liberal fundamentalist split into a conservative and liberal version. And the World Council of Churches, as they went that way years ago, where they were reinterpreting the Bible and even reinterpreting the gospel, saying maybe there's other religions that we could get saved through. But the evangelical Christians have held on to the idea that we can disagree on minor things, but the gospel's a major thing. Now, here's the thing. They would probably say, oh, we still agree on the gospel. But the gospel means good news. And good news has an evil twin brother called the bad news. The bad news is that we've sinned. The good news, of course, is we can be forgiven of our sin. And if you've just tuned in, Everett's not here to condemn homosexuality or any other practice. We're here to say that God forgives this. But we would agree with the Bible, with the scripture, with God, that it is a practice that God does not want. And we're not saying we're better than anybody else, but we're all sinful. But when somebody's going to redefine what sin is, it does get to the heart of the gospel, because we Absolutely. Can't preach a gospel of the forgiveness of sin if we don't first understand what is and is not sin. So I think that's where they're being disingenuous. I would agree. I don't care about tongues. It doesn't matter to me whether you're post-trib, pre-trib, post-toasting. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about basic morality, and it's not that there's a hierarchy of sins. It's not that homosexuality is any more sinful than anything else. If somebody got up and said, even though Romans chapter 1 lists gossip as a sin, we're a church that claims gossip is okay, I think you and I would be having the exact same conversation. Anything that the Bible lists as a sin is a sin, and we don't have the right to cherry pick.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. The position you just espoused, Bob, and the position I'm taking elevates the definition of the human being to the imago Dei, the image of God, rather than dumbing down the image of the human being to nothing but the base and the animal and the appetite. The sexual rights agenda basically is making the argument that we will dumb down the definition of the human being to nothing but the sum total of his or her sexual appetites and inclinations, and that our identity is no more than the sum total of what we're inclined to do, and we should have civil rights and legal rights accordingly. That is a terrible definition of a human being. It basically says you can do nothing but follow your instincts, your appetites, and your proclivities, and you should be granted the right to do so. Well, of course we don't believe that, because many of us have inclinations to do things that we need to choose not to do. In fact, all of us have inclinations to do things that we can and do choose not to do on a daily basis, because we're not dogs. We are human beings. We're not made in the image of dog. We're made in the image of God. In fact, Chesterton said, "I love a dog, I just don't like him spelled backward." And that was his way of saying that when we reverse the spelling of creation and start worshiping the created rather than the creator, we end up dumbing down the definition of human beings to nothing but the animal. Chesterton also said, any civilization that starts worshiping the animal will start practicing human sacrifice. And indeed, we're doing that today. We're sacrificing the definition of men and women to nothing but the animal, because we want to somehow celebrate the base and the appetite and the proclivity rather than the principles of personal responsibility and accountability, individuals with liberty and life that are made in the image of God.
Yeah, and since you mentioned Chesterton twice, since we're in a Chesterton role here, although he didn't originate this saying, he's the one that made this saying famous: when people stop believing in God, they'll start believing in anything. And aren't we seeing that today? A little kindergartner says, "Today I feel like a girl, even though yesterday I was a boy." Putting aside the fact that we roll over and play dead and then pat ourselves on the back, well, we don't believe in God, but look at the things people do believe in today. You see people talking out of both sides of their mouth again, because on one hand, they're claiming that some people are born gay, but on the other hand, they're saying your own sexuality, you can decide and change your mind and change anytime you want. So if we were talking about gay rights or gay marriage, people would consider it anathema for you to dare have the audacity to suggest that people aren't born that way. But talking out of the other side of their mouth, if somebody wants to decide, if some junior hire wants to decide, hey, today I feel like a woman, so I'm going to go into the girls' locker room, We just sit there and we don't say anything. And so how can they both be true? If our sexuality is that fluid, then we are making choices. I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
And here's the thing. You and I, as conservative Christians, will be accused repeatedly tomorrow and the days thereafter of being anti-science. We're the ones that supposedly don't believe in science because we're men of faith and conviction. Now, what is more empirically provable than your gender? What are the very first words a scientist, i.e. a medical doctor, pronounces upon every human being upon their birthday? It's a boy. It's a girl. There's nothing more obvious and objectively factual and empirically provable. There's no more scientific fact in our human existence than our gender.
And yet now they're taking away words like mom and dad because it's offensive to people. Well, what if somebody wanted to say words like genderless are offensive to me? See, this, it never seems to work both ways. Okay, my guest is Everett Piper. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
What better review of a book than to check with the customers themselves? Here is a recent customer review of Bob Siegel's fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Superior. As a middle school teacher, I am a prolific reader of juvenile fiction and an even tougher critic of the genre. With that said, I experienced sheer delight in reading the page-turner The Dangerous Christmas Ornament by Bob Siegel. Mike, the sixth-grade protagonist in the story, is a well-drawn character with all the weaknesses and strengths of a 12-year-old. Mike's e-ticket adventure engages the reader with his shenanigans of making his veggies disappear, cat talk, and creating a twin who doubles for him. Not only that, Bob Siegel skillfully weaves a subtle moral message with the metaphoric thread, which encourages a kid to be the best version of himself, all the while addressing the various angst of preteens. Finally, I was captivated to the last page, but disappointed when the Christmas ride of the magical ornament came to a satisfying conclusion. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here and very honored to have Dr. Everett Piper, a courageous man. You know, it's kind of funny, Everett. Welcome back to our program.
Oh, good.
It's funny that, you know, these days it's considered so cutting edge and courageous when somebody speaks on behalf of same-sex marriage. I would grant this much. Back in the late 60s and early 70s, when very few gay people had come out of the closet, even though we would still, as Christians, disagree with the lifestyle, I would admit that back then, if somebody took a stand against the majority like that, that I might have disagreed with them, but they were at least showing courage. But it doesn't take that much courage these days for people in Hollywood to speak about this, or for Christians to be mealy-mouthed. Now, you did say something that I want to go back to about you. You said it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but kind of seriously, that we'll probably be accused of all kinds of things as a result of this radio program. I know you've been on the radio. I'm on the radio every week, and I'm kind of used to being accused of things, because on the radio, people are driving, they hear you out of context. But I want to protect you a little bit, because there was something you said where, in context, I completely understood what you meant. Anybody listening in context would have understood it. But you, as an analogy of Christians not standing up for their convictions and needing to discuss whether we're going to embrace a gay marriage or the gay lifestyle, you said, well, would the NAACP need to discuss whether they're going to embrace the KKK? Now, I understand what you meant. I'm sure you know that somebody listening to that out of context and go, oh, okay, Everett Piper came on the Bob Siegel Show and he compared the gays to the KKK. That sounds ridiculous, but those are the times we live in. So let me just give you a moment to give a little disclaimer and put that back in context.
Thank you. I will put it in context. And indeed, there was no comparison whatsoever with the gay and lesbian person in the KKK. What I was saying is that there are organizations that have the right to stand for something of value. I don't disagree with the NAACP standing for the rights of minorities and elevating the dignity of those that don't stand with the majority of a given population. I think that is a good thing for them to do. I don't think they should ever be forced to have a conversation with any organization that's antithetical to their worldview or antithetical to their baseline assumption for existing. That was the point. Likewise, I don't think PETA should be forced to somehow hire people that want to eat meat and promote the slaughter of cattle. That would be absurd to force them into having that conversation, because it's a compromise of their baseline virtue and value for their existence. I was pointing out that certain organizations have certain assumptions that give them a right and a cause for existence, and it would be absurd to suggest that they should start talking about things that are antithetical to that very cause.
Okay, and I should say, you pointed it out very well the first time. Thank you for indulging me, and please forgive me for wasting our time to have you re-clarify, but I think you understand those are just the ages we live in. They're the times we live in, and I didn't want somebody getting a little soundbite snippet off the radio show, so I wanted to give you a chance to clarify that. Well, now, since we're on this subject, I'd like to get your take on the whole Kim Davis issue, where she, this, of course, was the woman who was refusing to grant same-sex marriage licenses, and she's been to court, and it looks like there's a possibility she may be going to jail again because she's still taking her name off of them, and it's kind of a legal mess. I wanted to get your take on that whole thing.
Well, I wrote an op-ed last week on it, and I said, first of all, Kim Davis took an oath of office, and she swore on a Bible, and she swore to defend the Constitution of the Commonwealth of the State of Kentucky. The Constitution of the Commonwealth of the State of Kentucky has a RFRA amendment, Okay? She's defending that, and she's doing what her oath of office called upon her to do. She also swore on a Bible. The Bible is clear in terms of its definition of biblical, of human morality. So she's doing exactly what she said she would do when she took an oath in office, and she's honoring the book upon which she swore that oath. For her to be castigated now and put in jail for doing what she said she would do seems peculiar to me. That's point number one. Point number two, why couldn't they have handled this in a different way than throwing the woman in jail?
Yeah, like a conscientious objector in the army.
Exactly. Exactly. We do that in other areas, and we have
we do it all the time.
Other people of faith, we've accommodated Muslims who are in a position where they have to do something that might compromise their faith.
Oh, we accommodated them at Gitmo. We were giving them Qurans at Gitmo.
Absolutely.
We wrote the book on accommodation.
Last I knew, the First Amendment guaranteed religious expression and prohibits the government from establishing or prohibiting free expression thereof. Establishing religion or prohibiting the free expression thereof. Why in the world is Kim Davis being thrown in jail for defending that First Amendment and exercising that First Amendment? Finally, I'll paraphrase Martin Niemöller, who, as you well know, said in the midst of World War II, first they came for the communists, I said nothing because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the socialists, I said nothing because I wasn't a socialist. They came for the Jews, I said nothing because I wasn't a Jew. And when they came for me, there was no one left to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me paraphrase him. First they came for the wedding cake bakers, I said nothing because I wasn't a baker. Then they came for the photographers, I said nothing because I wasn't a photographer. Then they came for the county clerks, and I said nothing because I wasn't a county clerk. And when they came for me, there was no one left to speak. At what point will we draw a line in the sand, whether we're Anglican or whether we're Anabaptist, whether we're Buddhist or whether we're Baptist, whether we're Mennonite, Muslim, Mormon, or Methodist? At what point will we all stand together and say, no, this is wrong. The government should not be imposing its definition of religion on the rest of us. And then I'll say this final word. Whoever gave the government the right to change the definition of a sacrament of the church? Marriage is a sacrament of the church. Where did the government get the right to start redefining it?
Well, not only is the First Amendment being suspended by a very thin thread, but I like to point out that no place in the Constitution does it say that it's the purpose of the Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution. Not if the word interpret is being defined as legislating from the bench. It seems, ironically, like Kim Davis knows the Constitution better than our Supreme Court.
Indeed, and the dissenting views in the Obergefell decision.
They warned that this would happen.
Yeah,
they warned us. Yeah, it just absolutely makes the head spin. And for those people, it's interesting that you mentioned the baker and the photographer, because one of the arguments people give is, well, she worked for the government. But the baker wasn't working for the government. The photographer wasn't working for the government. And for those of you who say, well, separation between church and state, how come the separation never works both ways? They're going into the churches, too. It's already happening. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Time.
that separation between church and state, it always sounds so good. There's only two problems. First, the words aren't found in our Constitution. However, the First Amendment is, which says Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or prohibiting its free exercise thereof. And its free exercise is being prohibited. Please welcome back Dr. Everett Piper. Dr. Piper, isn't it true that those who say, well, you know, you can do whatever you want in the church are being somewhat disingenuous because the church has been under attack too? Aren't they eventually going to go into the churches and say, oh, this isn't a religious issue, this is a civil rights issue?
Yeah, in fact, Donald Verrilli, as you know, and I'm sure you've talked about it on your program, when questioned by Samuel Alito during the Supreme Court hearings as to whether or not the Obergefell decision could, in fact, lead to the loss of tax-exempt status for church-related colleges and universities, said, yes, that could be a problem. So he's already shown his hand. The Obama administration's representative in the Supreme Court hearing has said, yes, that could be an issue. And, in fact, Christian colleges are being told right now that Title IX requires us to accommodate transgender students. If a guy says he's a girl, we're supposed to give them access to the girls' shower, the girls' restroom, and the girls' athletic team, and the girls' dormitory. Now, we appealed that to the Department of Education through the Alliance Defending Freedom representing us, and we were granted an exemption. And that's something to celebrate. But what if they would have said no? What if they would have denied our appeal?
Well, and what if it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court? If it goes back up to the same court that just made that idiotic decision they made 2 months ago, that could be reversed.
So rather than having the freedom that the Constitution and the First Amendment gives me, I'm held essentially hostage by some bureaucrat off in some distant room who works for the Department of Education, who is not even elected, but he's appointed or hired to do his job or her job. I'm left at the mercy of them to grant me an exemption when I, as a Christian organization, don't want to give a bunch of guys who say they're girls the right to use the girls' shower. And oh, by the way, Bob, how is that pro-woman to dishonor a female so much that I will subject her to a bunch of guys who say they are one of that they are one with her and that they want to use her shower?
Well, it's not pro-woman. It's not pro-woman at all. And sooner or later, the politically correct snakes will start eating each other because every politically correct cause contradicts another one. Sooner or later, some women will complain that some adolescent red-blooded junior high boy wants to go into the girls' shower room just to look at women, and he knows he's going to get away with it by saying, today I am a woman. Then when his friends laugh at him the next day, he'll say, oh, well, that was yesterday. Today I'm a man. Women will start complaining about this sooner or later. And because they're women, people will listen to them. So it'll be interesting to see how this all comes down.
I hope they do complain, and I hope they are listened to. And that is something to... Biblical feminism is something I can support because it elevates the woman, again, Imago Dei, to the status that she is created in the image of God, and that can't be compromised by somebody who isn't a woman and doesn't carry the same genetic code and the chromosomes and wants to avail himself of the same facilities as a woman. I'm going to elevate the woman and say, no, you can't diminish her identity down to something that is nothing but subjective. And per your definition, her identity is an objective value that can't be changed. How dare you try to dumb it down to something less than that?
Absolutely. Then people need to understand, because I know a lot of times Christians get accused of being very anti-women and chauvinistic, but Everett and I are both very aware that in the book of Galatians, Paul said that as far as status in the church is concerned, there's neither male nor female. But that same Bible says that there is a difference between a man and a woman as far as gender, but there's no difference as far as status, being made in the image of God and being brought closer to God.
Absolutely. The Bible is, Bob, you know this, I'm sure you've talked about it. Christianity rescued women from the status of chattel, which is what they were during the Roman Empire. Christianity elevated the woman beyond the slave and made her a human being equal to that of a man. That status for women did not exist in the Roman days, in the Greek days. It only existed as the result of Christianity prevailing and elevating the human being to the Imago Dei, rather than allowing someone else who has power to devalue a person and make them a slave.
Well, and Christianity also was the head of the abolitionist movement, not only in England, but in America. And the denomination that you and I are both part of, the Wesleyans, they were created over the issue of slavery.
And in fact, Orange Scott and Luther Lee, the founders of the Wesleyan Church, founded the Wesleyan Church because they were standing for the slave and for the poor. Because at that point, the church that they were a part of, the Episcopal Methodist Church, was not an abolitionist church and wasn't honoring the slave and the poor. The Wesleyan movement was an abolitionist movement, not out of social justice, but out of a biblical justice mindset, which recognized that when you compromise the Bible, as Chesterton said, we're having a Chesterton day. When you get rid of the big laws of God, you don't get liberty. You get thousands upon thousands of little laws that rush into the vacuum to replace those simple big laws. Orange Scott recognized that getting rid of the big laws of God resulted in thousands upon thousands of man-made little laws that were enslaving a population in unjust fashion, and he corrected it through the Bible.
I like it. Chesterton Day. We should declare this Chesterton Day, and I want to wish you, Everett, a very Merry Chesterton. But, one time after one of the articles that I wrote about same-sex marriage, somebody in the comments section wrote in big capital letters and exclamation points, "You are on the wrong side of history." My response to that is that we usually don't know who's on the wrong or right side of history until after it becomes history, because hindsight's always 20/20. For example, getting back to the abolitionists, they were viewed as very unusual in their day because slavery was so common, people didn't even think twice about it. They didn't even understand that it was a human rights issue, a lot of them, because they were that brainwashed. So people that speak out against the pack and against the tide of the times are often accused of being on the wrong side of history, but often throughout history, many times in history, the majority has been in the wrong and the minority has been in the right, and then time bears that out.
Yes, and this is going to be very simplistic and not as scholarly as you probably hope for, but history is his story. Okay, I'm not on the wrong side of history. I'm on the right side of his story. I know the end. I trust the end. God will prevail. I understand that my obligation is not to go with the masses and not to go with what's popular. My obligation is to stand with his story because he is in charge of how that will play out. My obligation is to be is to stand with Esther and say, for such a time as this. My obligation is to stand for righteousness when others want to run the other direction. I don't care what politics or power dictates. I do care what the principles of Christ call upon me to do, because I understand that the broader history of humanity is grounded in his story for us, and Christ will prevail.
Well, and I know you are a scholar, but I actually like the fact that you weren't being scholarly, because the motto on this program is making the obvious obvious. So I like that. Although some of the feminists, not biblical feminists, but the men are pigs feminists, would say we should say her story and not his. Anyway, we'll be right back for one more segment.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net.
The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, here with Dr. Everett Piper of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Dr. Piper, we're down to our last segment. The time went by far too quickly. I could probably have you on for hours and hours if our show went on that long, but because we'll probably be right in the middle of something when the music comes back on, we have to leave. Let me, ahead of time, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us on our program today.
Oh, I'm delighted to join you anytime, Bob.
Now, originally, before all this mess with the same-sex stuff and the transgender part of Obamacare, wasn't there an issue with Obamacare that was more related to abortion and birth control that first got the attention of your university? Wasn't that where you fought your first battle a couple of years ago?
Well, we're still fighting it. We filed a lawsuit against the Health and Human Services, as well as Kathleen Sebelius and Obama administration, because Obamacare requires you to provide abort-efficient drugs to your employees. I'll say it again. It requires you to provide abort-efficient drugs to your employees. We, of course, said no. We're a pro-life community. Every single employee that works here is pro-life. Why would we want to provide people something that they will not avail themselves of? This is against our religious convictions. We filed a lawsuit, and ironically enough, we're in the same lawsuit. We are co-plaintiffs with the Little Sisters of the Poor that you've read about.
How far up in the courts has this one gone at this point?
The district court has ruled against us, and therefore we're taking it to the Supreme Court. We believe the Supreme Court will hear our case in the next session.
So do you have any guess as to how they're going to rule? It seems like this court could do anything. They could go one way, they could go the other way.
I'm not optimistic. On one hand, Bob, it's absurd that the Supreme Court would tell a bunch of 70-year-old nuns that they need contraception at all. It's absurd that they tell these nuns who work for the Catholic Church and made a vow of poverty to the church that they have to avail themselves of abortion-inducing drugs. The absurdity of intruding on the Catholic Church and telling these elderly women what kind of contraception health care they need is so arrogant and so anti-women that it just makes you laugh if it weren't so sad. So in that sense, I can't imagine how they could pick on the Little Sisters of the Poor. And we're part of the same lawsuit. But I'm not optimistic.
This was one of the very first lawsuits filed against Obamacare, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we're not the first, but yes, we are one of the first, and we've been in the courts for months now.
Now, don't they get around that by saying, well, you're an education institution, you're not technically a church? Is that the way the other side is trying to get around this? Because it's such an affront to religious liberty, but they're saying, well, you're not actually a church.
Yeah, they're defining what the church is. They're saying that what you believe within the four walls of the sanctuary of your church is okay. We'll leave you alone. But if you try to do anything about that faith outside the four walls of that sanctuary, then we're going to tell you what you can and cannot do, because that is not the practice of religion that the Constitution guarantees. They clearly don't understand that Christianity calls upon us to have a holistic view of our faith and to practice it in every venue of life, like Kuyper said, reclaiming every inch for Christ and his kingdom. It's this absurdity of thinking that faith and Christianity is nothing but what takes place inside the church itself. They would even say that if you run a daycare center for children, that the employees of that daycare center, even though it's part of the ministry of the church, might have to succumb to the Obamacare regulations.
Well, as you put it so well, they're showing a complete misunderstanding about what the church is, because the church is the body of Christ. It's not the cathedral walls. But having said that, I find it interesting that the First Amendment doesn't have the word church in it anyway. It says Congress shall make no law concerning the establishment of a religion. And there's certainly religious institutions, but it goes even beyond that. We had a church in New Jersey that was sued, and this was before gay marriage even became the law of the land. This was before it was even the law in the state of New Jersey. All they were allowing was civil unions. A lesbian same-sex couple wanted to have a wedding using their facilities. The church said no. They were sued, and they won the lawsuit. So for those of you out here that says, well, you can still do what you want in the church, it's simply not true. If a baker cannot practice his Christian convictions, that is part of the church according to the biblical definition of Christianity. But even as all of you want to define it, the church, the building, the steeple, even if you want to go there, they're getting sued also. And it's been happening long before these last couple of years.
Absolutely, and I'll remind everybody that Oklahoma Wesleyan is owned and operated by the Wesleyan Church. We're the educational branch of the church. We're governed by it. We're owned by it.
And you're funded by the Wesleyan Church.
And we're funded by it. So why all of a sudden does the government decide that the educational branch of the Christian Church, the Wesleyan Church, or the Catholic Church, why does the government decide that a bunch of Catholic nuns who do nothing but serve the dying in their last days, that's all they do, is serve the dying in their last days, they have to have abortifacient drugs in their health care plan? This is insulting. It's insulting our faith. It's insulting the intelligence of women, as if they can't make their own decisions on what kind of contraception they do or do not want in their health care package.
And not only are they bird brain decisions, but they're decisions that shouldn't even be made by the courts. Whenever this has gone before the democracy, and most of the time it's gone before the legislatures, the people have voted against this, but we're not really a democratic republic anymore. We're more and well, a little bit in some places, but we're more and more becoming an oligarchy and a tyranny and a dictatorship.
Vacuums are always filled. If you take the big laws out, you're going to have thousands of little laws that rush in to fill that vacuum. And what that is, what's happened is we're no longer a constitutional republic because we've disavowed it. We've ignored it. And as a result, that simple document has been replaced by tens of thousands of laws governing every aspect of our lives, even Catholic nuns and whether or not they have to buy abortifacient drugs.
And I would hope that anybody listening, even if you're an atheist, if you're an agnostic, if you're just unreligious, maybe you're religious but you don't agree with the standards of the Bible, maybe you have a different view of the Bible, maybe you're a liberal Christian, maybe whatever you believe, I would think you'd be concerned that the courts are gaining this much power, because next time it will be your issue. It's like what Everett quoted from earlier. You didn't say anything, but they didn't come for you. But they're coming for you and your freedom sooner or later. A court could just as easily give a conservative ruling that you don't want than a liberal one. And even when the courts are more conservative, even if I agree with their decision, I'm not of the opinion they should make that decision. In Marbury versus Madison, the very first time the Supreme Court took that kind of authority, they ruled in favor of Thomas Jefferson's position. Jefferson at least had the integrity to say, I'm frightened that the court has this much power, even though they ruled with him. Now, that was a politician with some chutzpah.
We live in a time of ideological fascism. The Liberal Arts Academy was established, let's say Oxford in the 1200s AD, was established to liberate. The Liberal Arts Academy was established to liberate humanity, to educate a free man and a free woman. And today, rather than having a liberal arts academy, thus the title of my book, rather than having a classical liberal academy and liberal society and liberal culture, we have created fascism where you must submit, you must agree. The power at the top will tell us what we have to buy, what we can eat, what we can drink, how we can live, and how we can worship. We now have to submit to the fascist. The group, the collection of ideas that have been dubbed acceptable by those above us. That's not liberalism, that's fascism. And we need to recognize that if you want liberty and freedom, that you can find that only in the conservation of God's time-tested truths that gives you that liberty.
If only liberals were really liberals, as in being liberating, as being somebody who stands out from the pack, pushes the envelope, stands against the status quo, instead of marching in politically correct law. Lockstep. In the last few minutes we have left, who do you like in the primary race? And do you think any of them, if they get the nomination, will have the courage to make some real changes, even to the point of reversing some court decisions or challenging the courts?
Well, I'm going to make everybody mad now. I'm not a Trump fan, so if they're Trump fans.
Oh, you're not making me mad. I've given them a mixed review, but it's been more negative than positive on my show, so you're not making me mad at all.
Trump is not a conservative, number one, so
Trump,
why are we championing
Trump
him?
Is in favor of Trump. Trump promotes Trump.
Absolutely. And he is a pompous narcissist. We've already had one pompous narcissist in the office for 6.5 years. Why do we want another one?
I know. You know, when some of my Christian friends said they couldn't vote for Mitt Romney because he was a Mormon, and you know, Mormons believe they're going to become God someday, I said, what do you want, somebody who believes he's going to be a God someday or somebody who already thinks he's God now?
Exactly.
Everett, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for coming on our program. Ladies and gentlemen, Everett and I believe in the love of Jesus Christ. Whatever your situation is, whether you're gay, straight, transgender, whether you believe in abortion, don't believe in abortion, Jesus does love you. If you had been the only person in this world, you would have come down and died on the cross just for you. Our message is one of mercy and forgiveness, but we're not going to pretend that the Bible doesn't say what it says about sin. We'll see you next week.
Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.